Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill, and I'm delighted again to be able to speak to accomplished fund manager Chris McVeigh of Octopus Investments. So welcome, Chris.
Good morning, Paul.
Yeah, good. Yeah, we've got an absolute sort of deluge of key macro information coming out this week, not least decisions from the Bank of Japan, Federal Reserve, Bank of England, alongside the UK CPI print and a series of corporate results as well. So putting all that together, what's your sort of outlook for equities going forward for the rest of the year, especially in your sort of sweet spot of small caps?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot will depend on interest rates. With regards to small caps, we saw it towards the back end of last year. We saw strong performance in both November and December last year as interest rates were largely to the conclusion was they'll be cut by now, I think, was some of the yes. commentators, which clearly hasn't happened. So we're in a bit of a holding pattern right now. We still expect rates to be cut at some point this year. Whether we go first or whether we wait for the Fed is a bit of a discussion point. But certainly from a UK perspective, we do still expect rates to start to come down at middle of this year. And you know, growth equities, risk assets such as small mid-caps, we'd expect them to start to outperform again once that happens.
Mm. And just in terms of the sort of small cap sector, I mean, one of the sort of like, you know, major drags this year, not only obviously yield curves have ticked up because interest rate expectations have been pushed to the right, but more so actually in terms of, you know, fund manager redemptions. Are you still seeing that? I mean, not particularly the Octopus, but just across the industry, because I'd have thought, and most investors would have suspected that, you know, we'd have started seeing some recycled cash coming in from the M&A boom we've had at the end of last year, which would then be pushing up the markets. But it just doesn't seem to have happened for the first 3 months. It's been all one way, sort of damp and quite soggy.
Yeah, look, not yet. We certainly haven't seen money coming back into our end of the market. But the data would still suggest that there is still money coming out, as only it was towards the back end of last year. But, you know, we don't feel it to the same degree we felt it last year. I think it was quite persistent, consistent capital coming out of our markets. It feels much more, again, that holding pattern comment, it feels that's where we are just now. People not taking money out really because they believe what we believe, that the market's a really interesting valuation point. But the FOMO hasn't yet kicked in, which tends to drive these sorts of assets, especially at the smaller end. So people are sitting on their hands right now. But it leads back to that interest rate question. We saw people taking money out of the markets last year to buy money market funds. You know, that trade has arguably been done, and if rates are starting to progress back towards some semblance of normality, you'd expect people to be thinking about asset allocation and looking towards places where they can make substantial potential capital returns, and smaller UK equities are potentially one of those areas. So, we're not seeing the inflows, we're not seeing the FOMO yet, but it feels to me be in a much more stable position compared to where we were, say, middle of last year.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm with you. It's a matter. It should be, in theory, a matter of when, not if. And it's just is sort of like just waiting it out whilst this sort of like, you know, oasis period is sort of drawing, finishing off. Okay, well, let's move to some sort of stocks. Let's go to software and tech services, because there's some real sort of like beautiful gems down in the small cap area. Let's start with Active Ops, which is having a bit of a sort of like a, you know, a breakthrough year, actually. It does robotic automation software for banks, insurers, and most of the revenues are recurring. It's just entering sort of profitability. Like for like sales have been around sort of 10%, high single digits, etc. 80% plus gross margin, so a lot of drop through, and it's got a rock solid balance sheet. 75 million market cap. What's sort of your latest on this one?
Well, I think rather than robotics, it's more workforce optimization. It's workforce capacity planning software. It's enabling companies to monitor personnel efficiency, staff availability, demand forecasting, etc. Enables the managers to plan what they need, who they need, where they need it. So it's all about resource planning, operational efficiency. And you say it is starting to see, it's been on the market for a couple of years, had a bit of a bumpy period initially. It obviously came down quite some way in 2022. The shares are now up 11% or so year to date. We're starting to see that like-for-like growth progress. I think it was up 16% actually at last count from the numbers, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
And that's despite a tricky macro environment. So, you know, they are growing. They're growing well. The great thing about this business really is its high level of recurring revenues. I think 90% of the revenues this business has been generating are recurring in some nature. And therefore, you tend to allocate a higher valuation to a business which has got a substantially higher proportion of recurring revenues. You know, looking at its price to earnings multiple, you're going to say to me, Chris, this is on 95 times to March 25. What are you talking about? Why are you holding this? Well, basically, it's on 2x EV to sales.
Yeah.
So you'd expect a business like this with, you know, good levels of growth and that high level of recurring revenues to trade on more like 4 to 5x than a normal market. So, you know, it's still very cheap from that perspective. It's just breaking through to profitability, as you say, hence why that price earnings multiple looks inflated right now, but it's got a good balance sheet. And you meet the management team, and their tails are up. I think they're finding, you know, life quite exciting now, and the opportunities that they see as they go forward from here. So I think this business is in extremely good shape.
Good. Okay, well, that's great to hear. Okay, well, let's move to another one in the similar sort of like sector, but it's Netcall. It's a bit further along the line in terms of generating profit, still growing well. It basically, I think it started sort of like call center software and has branched out into sort of automation, but it helps healthcare come, well, basically help the NHS and legal in general and Lloyds and people like that better process all the inbound and customer service queries and this sort of stuff. Do you want to take us through this one? Because again, it seems to be doing pretty well. It's on a slightly higher valuation, just over 3x sales, but it's pretty profitable.
It is. You're right. It is further down that life cycle as far as development goes. 150 million market cap company roughly here. Call centers initially, but the business now suggests that the group is increasingly seen as a one-stop shop for digital transformation, they call it the digital transformation toolkit. So it is helping companies to move into that digital transformation of enterprises, reducing costs, driving efficiencies as you'd expect. It's also about cloud as well. They've been investing in their cloud platform, and cloud revenues, I think, are up about 20% over the last year, 18 to 20%. The wider group is up 8%, so the group is growing, but the cloud business, the cloud element of it, is growing much more strongly. It now accounts for about half of sales, and that's at higher margins, again helping to drive the margins there. And cloud subscriptions, I think, accounted for about 90% of new bookings in the last period. So again, this is a real driver for this business. And then taking cloud and taking the support services or support contracts the business already has in place, they make up about 75% of total revenues. And that was about 71% a year ago. So high levels of recurring revenues here again, much like the previous company, increasing levels of recurring revenues again as well. Cash generation here is strong. Net cash about 30 million at last count. And the cash is expected to continue to build from here. You say, yeah, it's not cheap. It's on, I think about 30 times multiple this time. So not the 95 we had with ActiveOps. But again, it's that EV to sales multiple that, again, I'd look at here, three times, roughly, as you say. But again, given the quality of the business, given the order book it has here, I think 58 million of order book right now against about 40 million of revenues forecast for this year. So again, the numbers are very much underpinned here. Again, this business should be trading on between 4 and 5 times in our view. So again, significant upside from current levels.
Let's move on to another one in the IT sector that should be doing really well from sort of the migration to cloud and AI, IOMART, but the shares aren't reflecting that. IOMART sort of like owns about 12, I think, data centers in the UK and offers sort of cloud services to small, medium-sized businesses, largely in the UK, but there's also certain ones abroad and has actually leases some data center space overseas as well in the States and I think in the Middle East. Can you take us through this one? Because I think this seems to be the Achilles heel is the growth of it, because it should be doing well like all the other cloud providers.
Yeah, I think the business perhaps it sort of lost momentum. It lost its earnings momentum. It perhaps lost its place in the market a couple of years ago. It's a Glasgow-based, not that I'm biased, but
Yeah.
Glasgow-based managed cloud services and hosting business. See, it's got 12 data centers. It's got a connected network infrastructure about 2,500 kilometers, a well-invested business across the UK, and it has got global reach, as you say. There was a management change. The founder manager, who is still involved as a non-exec, stepped away a couple of years ago. The replacement CEO, I don't think, fully capitalized on the business. And we've had a new CEO, Lucy Dimes, come into the business about 8 months ago, from memory. She's come in, I
That's
think, with
right.
a much clearer strategy. If you look at the presentation deck, the last one they produced, it does lay out much more cohesively the market opportunities they see it and their position within the market. So I think they now are starting to look at where they are, where they sit within the marketplace, and where they can potentially get to. And I think that's starting to, it takes a while to turn these businesses around, but she's focusing on sales, focusing on service. It feels a much more cohesive go-to-market strategy. It could be at an inflection point from an earnings perspective here. It's on 13 times earnings, but it's delivering 13 pence of earnings. If you look back to 2019, this business was generating about 19 pence. So material upside if they get this right. And as you say, they're in an interesting place with a good, well-invested asset base, and hopefully they can generate some decent returns from this level.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason that the market's doing well. So if they can get all the pieces working in unison, then they should do pretty well. Okay, let's move on to another one, which has really sort of transformed itself. Pinewood Tech, which is the former car dealership stroke distributor, Pendragon, and it sold off that to the US Lithia, I think it is, or that that business, and therefore it's left it with a sort of like a dealer management software platform that has got an embedded 24.5p dividend in it as well. So you'll take us through this one, because it does seem to be something that hasn't yet been sort of like fully priced in.
Yeah, I mean, this is, say, car dealership management software. It's been through a rather precluded takeover process, which has resulted in the business becoming a listed standalone technology enterprise that I don't think many people actually know is here yet. I think it's still to
Yes.
be properly discussed. That what you know, it's SaaS revenues. You know, it's what we like. So good visible earnings stream, good margins, 25% EBIT margins in this business, in the remaining business, and revenue growth. They're suggesting about 15% compound annual growth over the next couple of years. So really attractive multiples from the dynamics from that perspective. One that people haven't really got a handle on. Now, shares about 38 pence right now. There is a big dividend due back to shareholders in the next, I think, 8 weeks.
Yeah, it's 24.5p. So it's basically a blended of like 13.5, 14p.
Exactly. So therefore, people look at it right now, it looks expensive because ultimately the dividend's got to come out. But an EV/EBITDA, it's on about 11 times. So, you know, it's not as super cheap as it was when we first started looking at it. We met it back in December last year. But the real key is whether these estimates can be beaten. And having met the management team, they think that now they're out from the shadows of Pendragon, they can start to sell to other motor groups. And that's the opportunity for them, both in the UK, Europe, and in the US. And also, you know, just from a sense check perspective, we have spoken to a couple of leading industry players, chief execs of other motor groups. And again, they were upbeat about the technology here. So I think that there is a strong market position that they currently benefit from. They've got good revenues and good margins right now, good levels of earnings growth, and potential for significant upside if they can really capitalize on this opportunity. So I think this is really exciting. I'd say no one's talking about it yet. So that, from our perspective, is the sort of things we like to find.
Yeah, I would agree. It certainly isn't in the press, that's for sure. So once they pay that big dividend out as well, it will get more visibility, I think, with across investors. Okay,
Absolutely.
good. Let's move to sort of media and publishing. We've really got a diamond here. Bloomsbury Publishing. I mean, you know, it's sort of the Harry Potter wizardry, and then they've just also, well, they haven't just, but they basically signed up a lady in fiction, Sarah Maas, who great, it was just some fantastic sort of like, you know, best-selling books, etc., just recently, and the shares have responded well. What's your latest on this one? I mean, I'm guessing, you know, they have all the licensing for the books and for the you know, the digital rights for the audio books, etc. I guess the only long-term thing is, you know, will they be impacted by AI at all? But could you take us through your thoughts on this one, because it seems to be doing not a foot wrong.
This has been it's been a serial upgrader of late, under the steady tenure of CEO Nigel and CFO Penny. I mean, Nigel's been in the business, I think, for probably as long as you and I have been in the markets, Paul. So he's been around a long time. He's done a great job with this business, and it's very much still his business, and he's built this fantastic platform. Harry Potter, obviously, what was the diamond that they found years ago, that still is almost an annuity income for them. So give them a really good visible earnings stream from that perspective. They've got an education business which is growing, again, you know, subscription type revenues, again, high quality revenues increasingly, which is again another big tick in the box. And you're right, Sarah J. Maas has been the latest win for them. And she's, you know, her latest book, I think, reached number one in the US, UK, Australia. You know, it's really it's been fantastic. They've got a long-term deal with her as well. So a number of other books to follow. They're just doing, as you say, they're not putting a foot wrong. We get a the latest update was, you know, they are significantly ahead of expectations again, which is great. We get full year results in May, and that will be in alignment with their 2030 strategy presentation at that point as well. Let's see what they say. But you know, the business looks in great shape. It's not standout super cheap, 16 times earnings, but for the quality of business it is, the recurring revenues, the upside from Sarah J. Maas and whomever else they sign in due course as well, this business still feels to us to be in very good shape.
Yeah, and I guess the sort of the AI side, the risk is because they've got such premium content, it isn't going to get replicated by a generative AI, sort of like, you know, doing writers, being, you know, being authors, or alternatively through the internet discovery on their educational side, I guess.
I mean, with both sides of those, I mean, you could argue that any good writer could have been replicated by a bad writer through, you know, through generations
true.
And decades. And there's plenty of bad writers around. If you have got good content and good quality talent, you can monetize it and sell it. And they certainly have that with Sarah J. Maas and a lot of other people they have signed up with. So I'm relaxed on that. On the education side, again, it, you know, who knows how that might play out in due course, but with any AI, it's quality in, quality out. And if you want to ensure you get the best quality education, you want to therefore take it from a quality provider. And I think these guys have that credibility already. So again, I'd be surprised if that impacts their business.
Yeah, no, I would agree. Okay, good. Let's move to your roots, I suppose, STV up in Scotland. And they seem to have really done grabbed the bull by the horns and moving towards a digitization strategy. They've got their own production studios and they've got their online streaming platform alongside, obviously, their normal sort of linear terrestrial TV. Do you want to take us through this one? Because, they do seem to be still growing. The margins are coming down a bit, though, I think.
Here we have to sort of take a step back from STV. Yes, it's a Glasgow business again. I'm not biased, But it's a business I think is, again, under the radar screen. It's 100 million market cap, so 6x earnings. The group is very much in three distinct buckets now. So it was historically just your STV, your ITV equivalent in Scotland, the traditional broadcast and advertising model. They've got that business still. That's a bit that's under a bit of pressure. Revenues are down about 15% year on year there. Given the macro, as you might expect, operating margins, again, you mentioned them, they're down a bit as well. Operating margins in this division, about 12%. They were 22 at the last count. Mm. So, yes, that will recover ultimately. You know, these advertising-led models do have an element of cyclicality about them, and that's a good quality business. It's still making a decent profit despite these challenges. That's one part of it. They've got then two other distinct buckets, one of which is a digital business. That's the set-top box or the STV player, equivalent.
It's like the ITVX.
The equivalent, exactly, to that up in Glasgow, up in Scotland. And again, that's a business which has been growing nicely for them. That's now 20 million of revenues. The management set out a three-year plan at the last set of results a couple of weeks ago, and they think they can drive that up towards 30 million of revenues. Again, sensible margins, operating margins here about 50% at the last count. So again, a highly profitable part of the business. And then finally, you've got the studios business, which they've been building, and that's just inflected into profitability over the last year. It's now a leading UK production group. It's got 24 creative labels. The current market's a little bit soft from a commissioning perspective, but they've got a good slate ahead of them. They've secured 87 million of revenues for this part of the business for March 24. That's up from 24 million in 2022. So seeing some really good growth here, and the business here thinks, the management team think, they can get this business up to about 140 million of revenues in the medium term by 2026. The margins here, best-in-class margins in the industry between 13 and 15%. They're a bit smaller, so they're saying they can get up to about 10%. If you take that 140 and a 10% margin, value it on between 9 and 10 times because of what it is. It's a bit of scripted and a bit of unscripted, and you basically get the studios business is worth more than the market cap of the total business than for broadcast and digital are in for free. I think that's the way of looking at it here. It's a studio business now. It's got a broadcast platform, but the studios are the growth. And that's really starting to come through for them now. And the market is not looking, because the market's been looking at the EPS in the business. It's been going nowhere over the last couple of years as they've been investing in these new platforms. And that's now starting to come through. So I'm quite excited by this. 4.9 times EBITDA. I think, again, it's one that people haven't really picked up on.
Mm. Is there an opportunity to unbundle that? Because if they're doing commissions for other third parties, your likes of Netflix or anybody like that, then there would be a sort of like an argument to say logically it should be outside of STV.
Perhaps in time. I think right now they benefit from being under the one umbrella. But you're right, as a business grows and scales, maybe there could be something to do there in due course.
Okay, good. Well, let's move to sort of gaming services specialist. We've got Keyword Studios, which has been on a sort of like a buy and build strategy for the last 10, 15 years. And now it's a pretty big business. it's not really put a foot wrong in terms of its actual performance, but obviously in the last 12 months there's been softness in the gaming side, and people have also, there's a bit of a battleground stock, have been questioning whether it's going to be a beneficiary or a victim of AI in terms of sort of like, you know, helping the big games publishers to develop and to localize and to you know, dubbing and translation and distribution and stuff of, and testing of their particular games, etc. Can you take us through your latest thoughts on this one? Because you can get, it seems to be a Marmite opinion here.
Yeah, I mean, it has been under the cosh a bit from the AI debate over the last year or so. There was a, sure, you know, there was a basket by an investment bank which was trying to short a bunch of companies. Which
I didn't know that.
They associated with AI. This is one of them. So it created a few waves. But ultimately, this is a we met these guys last week with Bertrand and the team into the office. Mm. It's a global business. It's a leading business. This is a business which has got, you know, a multiple. It's an outsourcer, as you say, obviously, for game development, game localization, game testing, etc. It's a multiple the size of its nearest competitors. It's still got single-digit market share. You know, as the large studios and go through, you know, the process they're going through right now, some people are seeing some job reductions across the industry, which is always unpleasant. But, you know, these businesses clearly are trying to right size for the market environment that we're in right now. We're obviously in the COVID boom times. Mm. The market adjusted for that, and now we're coming through to a more normalized period. As the businesses need to address these different circumstances, they need to outsource more. And keywords are the quality outsourcer to partner with, and they've got great relationships with the customer base. Mm. The market is still, you know, it's a challenged market compared to where it was, but they're still delivering high single digits organic growth this year. Plus acquisitions, it should drive about 13% revenue growth for this business for this year. That's pretty attractive. And talking to them last week, they would expect to get back to low double-digit growth from an organic perspective going forward. So still in good shape, still a massive runway for both an organic and an inorganic perspective to continue to bolt on businesses. It's on 12 times. This is a global leading business and on the wrong multiple just because of some debates around AI. Yes, AI will change the landscape in the same way that computers change the landscape in which we've been operating in over our careers, Paul. I don't think it's going to eradicate the need for a quality enterprise such as this business. And I think they're in pretty good shape. But the debate has shifted. I think the debate when we first started talking about AI with particularly this name was, you know, AI is going to take away your business. And yeah, now AI is going to be seen as a tool to benefit your business and to improve efficiency and to potentially drive margins in the medium term. So I think it's an opportunity rather than a threat, certainly in the timeline, the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it does look very generously priced on a or cheaply priced on a, you know, sort of like for a world-class trophy asset there with real economies of scale. Okay, let's pivot to a different sector, healthcare. We've got hVIVO, which does challenge vaccine trials in the I think largely in the UK, etc. This one's done really, really well. I think it's a pretty dynamic CEO, Mo Khan, and they help biotech companies launch their products by getting the whole testing process through quicker with better data, etc. So do you want to take us through your latest on this one? Because the shares have done very well over the last couple of years.
Leader in human challenge trials. It's basically taking healthy volunteers and using them in the testing process. It basically does, as you say, expedite the process. It reduces cost as well, and it's not used in every trial yet, but we think it's got some substantial momentum. Pfizer is the biggest partner that they've got a product to market with today, I think. Mm. Certainly that's giving them some credibility, that giving them the credibility that the process works. It does what it says it should do, and these guys are the right guys to do it with. They've got, you know, good levels of knowledge here. It's a science here. You know, it's very hard to emulate what they're doing. You and I can't open a clinic, Paul, down the road and start testing these.
Yeah.
They need to have all the data, and you know, need to know how exactly to design these studies in order to get the right results, in order to make them useful in the trial process. So these guys know how to do it. Mokan, as you say, is a bit of a force of nature. He's done a great job at refocusing this business. Right now, it's got great levels of earnings visibility, revenue visibility. I think December 24 is fully done. Next year, again, they've got great levels of visibility, and also for the following year as well, such as the nature of the business of which they operate. People want to contract them. They are expanding their facilities. They're just opening a new site down in Canary Wharf, in one of the towers down there. And you know, that gives them, you know, that potential to continue to expand and build on the business. It's not cheaper than 19 times. So you might sit here and say, well, I've missed it, but I don't think you have. I think the business itself has been very good at managing expectations, and we'd expect them to deliver further upgrades in due course as well. So again, this is one. I think it's relatively underknown, but again, a leading business in the UK from a technology perspective, focused on healthcare, obviously, but doing a great job.
Yeah, no, I would agree, absolutely. Okay, well, let's keep into the same sector. Let's move to another one, which did a big acquisition actually last week, Advanced Medical Solution, which is a sort of niche specialist in wound care. Does, I think, sort of like stitches, and it does glues, adhesives, you know, and, you know, products that actually help people heal after sort of like injuries and stuff like that. It bought a big sort of like rival, I think, or a complementary business, Peter Surgical, last week for about 141 million euros on a sort of 12 to 13 times EBITDA multiple, which is a bit higher than actually their current multiple, which I think sort of brought the shares down. Just you take us through the latest on this one, because I know they'd been struggling a bit with growth, and this one seems to be a real transformational acquisition for them.
I think struggling with growth is a bit unfair. They had to go through a process in the US, I think, with regards to getting their own products in, their own branded products in, so that caused a bit of a hiatus. I think a year or 18 months ago, they had a bit of an issue with that. But that was dealt with, and they're now on a much stronger footing from that perspective. So I think the underlying business is actually in pretty good shape. But you're right, the Peter Surgical business, we met these guys last week as well. This is complementary, as you say. It takes them into France, obviously, in a big way, but again, it takes them into a slightly different product set, which they think they can monetize more effectively under their umbrella and with their customer relationships. Again, we think it makes sense. You're right, and you know, the shares have been under a bit of pressure over the last week or so, given the deal. But we think it's the right thing to be doing. The business itself is on about 9x EV/EBITDA, so it's not expensive. And as you say, I think this does give them that next leg and you know, some potentially very exciting upside from here.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, you know, you'd have thought there'd be high recurring revenue streams. And again, operating the healthcare sector, there's lots of barriers to entry into it. You can't just rock up there and supply some stitches.
And you and I couldn't do it next week. No, you're absolutely right. So, yeah.
Okay, good. Let's pivot to another sector. Let's go to consumer. We've got Nichols, which is your Vimto owner, came out with some year-end results last week. Can you give us your latest on this one? What sort of attracted you to it? Because obviously it's not an iconic, well, I mean, it is an iconic brand, Vimto, but it's not. It's more of a local taste rather than actually a Coke or a Pepsi.
I believe you said that, Paul. Try telling that to people of Manchester.
Sorry about
this
that.
This is an iconic asset.
It is an iconic, yes.
Nichols, about 400 million market cap. Vimto is a lead product, as you say, which it continues to develop and expand and take more space in the supermarkets. UK business is still growing. UK package is up about 2%, 1.5%. So despite some market challenges and a more steady macro environment, they're still delivering growth here. But actually, it's the international business that's really going great guns for them. It's up about 6%. Middle East and Africa in particular. It's got a big Ramadan link. It is used. It has, yes. That's what drives that business. And it's I think there's a I can't I'm not quite that wrongly, but they've been in the Middle East with Ramadan. This is used as a sort of celebration. You go into these supermarkets, these massive displays.
Wow,
I've
I
been
never
to.
know that.
So yes, well, it's it, it, you, we you and I obviously don't tend to go over there for Ramadan, but it certainly is an it's a it's, it, it has been a great foothold for them into that market using Ramadan, and they're expanding elsewhere within Africa as well. So the international business is hard to quantify the exact revenues, because ultimately they sell the concentrate into these countries, and then obviously they sell on from there. They've a partner or a couple of partners in those countries. But roughly the revenues for Vimto in the international markets is the same retail revenues or similar retail revenues to the UK numbers as well. So it's a scale operation, a good balance sheet within this one as well. 67 million of cash. And they're on the lookout for deals. They have been on the lookout for deals for some time. But again, we had these guys in last week, and I think we think something's fairly imminent. We'd expect something to hopefully come at some point in the next year. So let's wait and see. We have thought that in the past, but it's on 16 times earnings, 10 times EV with that. So it's a quality business, good balance sheet. It's got a great foothold in parts of the UK, maybe not in your supermarket, Paul, but elsewhere. And it's got some really good international presence as well. So I think it's much more exciting than people perhaps are aware of. And it has got much more opportunity ahead of it.
Yeah, and also I'd have thought actually, given it, I did use the wrong words, so apologies for that. Given it is an iconic brand, I would actually say that it could be a takeover target. I know we haven't really talked on, but there's plenty of acquisition targets, and AJ Barr would be a perfect fit for these. I would have thought anyway. I mean, I know they're your Scottish link with the Iron Brew owners, but. It is called a thing. It's a portfolio. It's something you can't replicate, can you?
AJ Barr, another iconic drink in a different part of the
Yes.
country. But Nichols, I'd be surprised. There's a big family ownership here. The
Oh,
Nichols
okay.
family's on a big percentage. It'll be ultimately up to them. But yeah, it would fit within a bigger business, but ultimately on its own, it's still doing the right thing, still generating cash. We think it's got a good opportunity as an independent business.
Yeah, okay. All right, okay. Well, let's move to stay in this consumer, but more of a counter cycle. We've got H&T, which is the UK's biggest pawnbroker. The shares, surprisingly, have been quite weak. I think it had a bit of a trade, a sort of profit warning just before Christmas. Really, not on its pawnbroking, which is going from strength to strength, but largely on its retail arm. Anyway, it came out with numbers just the last couple of weeks, I think, and they were pretty good. So the shares have m moved up again. Still very cheap, though. What's your sort of latest on this one?
Again, we had these guys in last week. It's been a very busy period with results, as you're aware.
Hmm.
Yes, the leading UK pawnbroker, the shares have had a torrid few months. When the group announced earlier in the year, you say profit warning, but the group announced it will deliver profit growth of 40% for
Yeah.
the year, not the 50% it had in the market or whatever it was, 55. It was just a case of management or management of expectations, management of consensus expectations, and that was a mistake, sadly, that did impact the share price. I mean, looking ahead to the next few years, the market has about 10% profit growth for this year and next. It feels much more sensibly placed, but it is doing a good job. It is still growing both organically and inorganically. Recently, bought a one large store, whose name escapes me. But again, it just helps cement their footprint within different parts of the country. It's trading on about 6 times, 6.6
Yeah.
times to December 25. Given that level of growth, I talked about a 40% profit growth in the forecast, 10%-ish going forward. That still feels to be the wrong price. It should be trading, I'm not saying this is a high rated business going forward, but it certainly should trade 10 to 12 times, and that's double the current levels. So in the meantime, you're getting paid a 5% dividend yield. So it's unfortunate. Profit warning is what it's associated with, but actually it still delivered
Yeah.
fantastic growth over the period.
Yeah, it got sort of like wrongly labeled, really, wasn't it? I mean, it was a sort of like pat the back type of result. You did a really good job, but you got because they put the bar so high, they got accidentally slated, which was ridiculous. Okay, let's move to another one. We've got Trainline, which came out with results last week, and the shares ticked up sort of 10-15%. Obviously, people probably know this one from booking rail tickets in the UK and coach fares and stuff like that, but it also has got a growing European business as well. Do you want to take us through this one? Because, yeah, I mean, it's not optically that cheap, but you can't replicate it. I mean, it's got huge network effects, so to speak.
I know, pardon the pun, but look, this one did manage expectations properly. And a very strong recent trading update. Revenues are about 400 million. That's up 20%. The guidance they gave to the market was between 15 and 20% margins. 2.3% of net sales, again, above where the previous guidance was. So they did deliver there. And the business is growing, as you say. It's got that network effect. UK growth is still 20-plus percent. But it's all about the international. As you said, international was up 14, but that masks what was happening. There, you know, different markets growing at different paces, given where they are within their development. Spain and Italy grew at about 43% combined. Other markets were more subdued, in part as they stepped back from France in particular until that market developed. So you're seeing fantastic levels of growth in certain areas across Europe there. And you're right, it's not cheap. It's in high 20s on a price-to-earnings multiple. But if they can deliver in Europe, then this still has a long way to go. That's ultimately what you're buying it for. UK, done. It's got that great market position. And it's just cementing that, and it will be cash generative and whatever else to be fantastic. But ultimately, you want to see that European growth come through. And when it does, you know, I think the shares have still got some significant momentum from here.
Mm. And it must have huge data, you know, sort of like, you know, capture there, as in like, it must have value rather than just offering a service. There must be something on that data, whether it's, you know, helping other adjacent products move into this market to upsell, whatever, I don't know. But you probably find there's some monetary aspect that you can do with all that data at some point. Okay, let's move to Sanderson Designs, which is a sort of like a luxury internal design furnishing firm. They do wallpapers and fabrics and paints and stuff like that. Reminds me a bit of the Laura Ashley Kudos years and years ago, sort of like really, you know, well sought after, etc. The shares, given the, you know, the sentiment towards all things sort of like building related, are really, really cheap, but it's got a rock solid balance sheet. And I know it's licensing quite a bit of its designs out internationally, and also doing pretty well out in the US as well. Should you take us through this one? It looks mispriced to me, even though obviously it's a difficult, challenging area.
No, it's right at the other end of the market cap spectrum from Trainline. 75 million market cap, this one is trading on right now. It's a UK-based luxury interior business. It's got a number of brands. I'm looking at them here. Zoffery, Sanderson, Morris, Harlequin. You know, these are quality names that my wife likes to stock our house with. So it's, you know, this is, you know, quality product. And you're right, it's been a trickier market, particularly that end over the last, you know, couple of years, given what we've seen with the economy, etc. But these will recover. This business has been well managed. The licensing business in particular, as you say, is delivering for them. The full year trading update a couple of weeks ago was in line, largely because licensing has been so solid for them. But they are, you know, the core business itself is in pretty good shape. The management team, Lisa Montague, came into the business about 5 years ago and has done a great job there with streamlining various aspects of the operations. You're right, the balance sheet is great as well. It's got 16 million of cash on the balance sheet. It's paying a 3.5% yield right now. So, you know, you've been paid to wait. It's on 8x earnings, 3.5x EV EBITDA. But ultimately, you know, there is substantial upside as and when the macro recovers and this business capitalizes on that.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that's a perfect segue, actually, to one of the house builders. You've got MJ Gleeson in your portfolio, which does affordable houses, I think, in the sort of the Northeast and in the Midlands, etc. So not your sort of central London, but they came out with a trading, and they all, the house builders all seem to be saying the same thing. It's been a tough 18 months, particularly after the sort of the Liz Truss sort of like saga with the LDI crisis when interest rates shot up. But now that people are expecting interest rates to fall down, swap markets have reduced, meaning the availability and the affordability of mortgages has increased. So they're starting to see all the house builders increasing footfall at their sites, including MJ Gleeson. Do you want to take the shares have recovered from their October lows, no doubt about it, but they still trade at just slightly above sort of like, you know, net assets, etc.
And this is a business, it's there's two aspects to it. There's a land business which focuses on the south of the country, which is basically selling, you know, options on, or buying options on lands, getting planning consent for them and selling them on, relatively low working capital required, but it's a skilled business. That's a bit lumpier, but the business that we really get excited about is this house builder in areas of economic regeneration. It's you know, it's a fantastic product. You can buy a house from MJ Gleeson and pay less than you would do on your council house rent. You can, because ultimately the selling price is such an attractive level. These houses are much more energy efficient as well, so your running costs are again much lower, and they sell to people. You know, it can be a couple. They can be on, you know, I think that the example they use is the husband drives a bus and she works in the local supermarket, and their combined salary is enough to enable them to get a quality home. And it's an area they tend to sell to people who are, you know, live within 1 mile of the site. So it's in the local environment. People, you know, it helps that community aspect. You're not building out a greenfield in the middle of nowhere. It's regeneration of brownfield sites. So lots of environmental, social aspects to this business that we really like. The returns are pretty good from the house building perspective, mid-teens, which is, you know, perfectly credible. And it's, you're right, it has recovered. It's on 14 times now, and it's multiple. So it's a little bit above where it would be in a normal market. But, you know, this business is due to deliver 35 pence of earnings this year. If you look back to June 2022, it delivered almost 80 pence. So, you know, there is a long way to go here for this business. Got a newish chief exec in place. He's doing a great job, we think, and just refocusing the business on costs and quality, etc. And I think this business, again, is in fantastic shape over the medium term. It's relatively unique. Nobody else really does what they do apart from one other private business called Keepmoat. So it's a market they have, for some reason, got to themselves right now as other house builders focus elsewhere. But they're being able to deliver decent returns, you know, with potential for a lot more growth as the economy and the market recovers and interest rates normalize, as you said.
Yeah. Well, and also assuming that Labour wins the election at the end of the year, you could see, you know, affordable housing, social housing, and, you know, that sort of stuff could get a real sort of political boost. So, it should be in perfect position.
They sell to first time buyers. I mean, that's their focus is the young under 35 market. And you're right, the next government, whoever it is, Labour or Tory, are always going to want to encourage home ownership amongst the younger generations. It's something which we need to encourage in the UK. And these guys are one company that's facilitating that.
Mm. And another sort of trend, I think, on sort of housing and stuff, both on, you know, existing properties and new properties, premiumization. That takes us to a brickmaker we got in the portfolio, Michelmers, which is a sort of premium brick manufacturer. They're sort of like fairly niche, good-looking, aesthetically pleasing type products, either whether they're bricks or, you know, for properties or for actual infrastructure as well. They go into railway stations and this sort of stuff. Again, the shares are bombed out in building products, but they've got a rock-solid balance sheet, and it's just really waiting for this recovery. And if the house builders presumably do start, you know, breaking new ground, these guys are going to well positioned to take the you know, to benefit from it.
I mean, as you say, these are quality assets. The product they make is harder to be replicated by imports and by some of the more mass market manufacturers. So they're very much specialist products, higher price point protects them from that perspective. And they also were quite careful during the price up environment, the inflationary times, not to be To be moving things around too much. I think other people perhaps in the space were doing so, but Michelmersh were very much of the view that that doesn't, you know, that is difficult to manage from a customer perspective, and their own customers, they wanted to keep those relationships. So, you know, they've done well. The last update in November was in line. That was despite, you know, the difficult market given the lower level of housing starts. The business is in good shape, as you say. It's well invested. It's a quality asset base, and you're right. It's cheap, some 5x EV/EBITDA. So it is one that we hold in the portfolio on the premise that it will recover when the market recovers. It's paying us a 4% dividend yield right now. To wait, we're not worried about it. You know, I'm not expecting a recovery in the next few months. I don't think the volumes are going to come back in the next few months, but we would expect them to be back in the next year or so, and these guys are very, very well placed for market recovery. The results are next week. Let's see what they say. But you know, it's one we've held for a long time. We like this business. We like how it's managed, and we like the asset base.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Another one in that sort of the same vein, well managed, and you know, sort of like waiting for a upturn, is Almasak, which basically does sort of drain management systems and vents and stuff like that, but largely into commercial property rather than actually into buildings, etc., rather than actually into the residential sector. Came out with results just recently, pretty good, and they've got a, you know, big payment. You know, they've got 6% dividend yield, sort of seven times PE, very cheap. What's your sort of your latest? I'm guessing it's a similar sort of thing. You know, just good quality asset.
They're specialist building products. You've got three divisions: water management and building envelope, very much commercial, and then a house building products business, which they are developing, which is growing strongly, relatively small at this stage, but really we think it's got fantastic potential upside. It's you know, again, tricky end markets, as you say, but the first half numbers were robust. I think they delivered 12% growth in profits despite one large contract at Hong Kong Airport that slipped, but they still expect to get it. But they're, you know, it's not in the numbers right now. And you're right, it is cheap. My numbers are 6.4 times on a price to earnings and a 6.4% dividend yield. So, you know, that's very odd, very rare you see those two multiples meet. But you're being paid to wait here as well. It's not going to race away, but it's a very solid business. It will grow, will recover. We do think these three core platforms have got really strong potential for upside in the medium term. It's a business you come out of the meetings just thinking they could be really starting to accelerate when things get much better. So it's not expensive. It's got that yield, and it's got the upside potential in due course.
Yeah, and I'm guessing also there's a long-term secular tailwind to sort of improve energy efficiency and water utilization. That you know, governments around the Western world want buildings to become, you know, better users of the natural resources. So it's got a benefit from that, I guess.
Absolutely, I think that some of the products they provide do feature within that, you know, that perspective particularly highly. But that, again, that gets us excited when we meet them. But
yeah, okay, good. Okay, well, let's move to the final section. We've got sort of financials. We've got Fintel, which is all things sort of like financial services and data providers for investors, for IFAs, and for product providers. Again, it's a bit of a done a bit of a buy and build, but it hasn't put a foot wrong, and it's got good growth, both organic and by acquisition. And I was just looking at the actual margin, sort of 25% EBIT margin, so it must be doing something right.
It came to market as Simply Biz, which some of your customers and clients might know, and then it bought De Facto, which is obviously a great brand, and obviously rebranded Fintel. It's you know, you're right. It's a business which we think has got a good platform. It's not super cheap, 20-odd times in a multiple, but we think it's got great scope for medium term growth. The joint chief execs have done a great job there. We think in building this platform. And embedding themselves within the IFA network in particular, and I think they've got some substantial potential growth in due course. It's just a nice business with a lot of bits to it operating within that ecosystem that I think they'll monetize in time.
Yeah, I would agree. And there's quite a lot of M&A going off in that market as well, so you never know. It could be one of those trophy assets that are bought out. Okay, good. Let's move to another one. We've got Frenkel Topping, which is... I think they've actually just got a new chairman, a Mr. Christopher Mills from Harwoods, and he's got 30%, which seems to be quite interesting. The shares haven't performed that well over a sort of 2-year perspective, but effectively they're a specialist sort of advisor consultant to help people do claims and then manage their compensation in their wealth management division. So they're a bit vertically integrated, but very, very unique. They trade, like the whole of the asset managers, very cheaply, 12 times PE with cash on the balance sheet.
Yeah, I think this is one that you say is unique. It is unique, we think. It's got this vertical integrated, as you talk about, way that they build their business, they advise these customers, these clients, these people who go through these issues, which is, sadly, it is far more prevalent than you like to think, but they do help with the process of running the claim, managing the claim, settling the claim, and then managing the asset, which, it is a business which they do well. They are growing their asset base. I think assets under management are over 1.35 billion now, up from 1.2, am I right, saying last year. So they're still delivering good levels of growth. You're right, the business hasn't quite delivered from an earnings, from a share price perspective, but the underlying operations are doing what they said they would do. I think it's a little bit overlooked. People don't know it that well yet. I think perhaps the profile needs to be raised. But Richard Fraser, chief exec, I think he lives and breathes this business. He's doing a very good job there. We firmly believe it's too cheap. It's paying a 3% dividend yield right now. It's on about 11 times the earnings. I think these businesses should trade on, 13, 14, 15 times the earnings. So there's decent upside from that perspective as and when the market wants to look back towards this end of I think what's happened here is lots of the stocks in this end of the market are being discounted because, because of the environment we're in, because of the, we talked about flows into asset managers earlier on. And I think, there's been a sell-off in the sector in general, and this has come down with that. I think ultimately, it should re-rate. It should get back up to those mid-teens multiples, and the share price should react over time.
Yeah, and it comes down to what we talked about originally with all those, fund manager redemptions across the whole industry, and that's taken the wind out of investor sentiment. And so
it's not hugely liquid, this stock. If you have a small seller, it's going to drive the share price down, which I think is what we've been seeing. So
yeah, another one which in that sector, the last one is Premier Miton, which is a specialist boutique sort of like a UK fund manager. They had Gervais Williams, I think he's one of their sort of the smaller cap guys that the investors will probably know, and the shares are sold off. They're mostly active sort of like, investment platform across the whole, industry, 10 billion of, of AUM. So, and they're traded about 100 million, just less than 100 million market cap. Can you take us through this one? Because again, it's just looks stupidly priced given they've got a big rock solid balance sheet.
Like again, it's, as I said before, the whole sector has been sold off in sympathy to concerns about the market and, resulting, liquidity, as you talked about earlier on, people selling down some of the stocks and limited buyers around right now. But you're right, this is super cheap, single digit multiple. It's got ambitions to double its AUM, which I think they'll do over the medium term. They got newish head of sales in the business, Joffrey, who's very up for it. If you meet him, he is a bit of a force of nature. I think he's going to be quite key to driving this business forward and taking it into new markets. You're right. You've been paid to wait right now. The dividend yield is material. I think it's 10%. If that gets reduced a bit, we won't mind. You're paid to wait for this business to recover. It will recover. You will make a substantial return when the markets feel happier about life, when people start to asset allocate towards active management, towards, you mentioned Gervais, but there are a number of other fund managers in there, obviously, active managers within the stable. They will all benefit from increased flows, and given the operating platform here, you'd expect to see the earnings multiple progress as well as the EPS progress. So I think this business right now is on trough earnings, trough multiple, big dividend yield. It will recover.
Yeah. And then just stepping back, I think you raise a really good point in the fact that if you operate in the small cap area, because liquidity is quite, low, et cetera, unless you get in before the correct, you know, the upswing into, then you won't get another chance, because these things happen quite quickly, don't they? I guess. Have you got any thoughts? You don't know when, but when they do, they'll be moving up quite rapidly.
I think what's interesting right now is you talk to the market makers, if you bid them for stock, they're not sitting with a lot of stock in the books. And that's because the markets have been a bit volatile, obviously, over the last couple of years, and they don't want to be seen to be holding losses. So you're right. When people come on to buy many of these companies, there isn't a lot of liquidity around, and it does move the price quite quickly. So when that happens, Paul, I don't know. Mm. What's the catalyst? I don't know. Interest rates, yes. The British ISA last week, I think, was helpful. Other, you know, initiatives might also be helpful. Some IPOs would be good. But look, ultimately, we're sitting here at a market, you know, in the UK, which is super cheap, 40% discount to its global peers. We're sitting with the small cap end of the market at a 20% discount to large cap peers, i.e. a double discount within the smaller end of the space. These are valuations which we haven't seen since the global financial crisis. These don't stay around here for very long. Now is the time that investors need to be looking at small mid-cap equities, because ultimately, in 18 months' time, you will be sitting on a potentially material profit should conditions normalize, and we fully expect them to do so. The economy in the UK isn't in bad shape, despite what the press might tell us. We've had the ONS upgrade the UK economy twice over the last year. We're not the sick man of Europe. We're very much in line with other developed economies. It's not fantastic, but it's not dreadful. And this year, we think we'll deliver modest economic growth. That doesn't justify the valuations of our equity market. It is super cheap. And, you know, if we don't realize that, if investors don't realize that, we're going to continue to see takeouts, as we see almost every day, a company bid for at a... Often, you know, I think the average premium last year was 70%. Yeah. And these companies aren't being bought at that premium because the buyer thinks they're therefore fair value. The buyer is buying them with the view that they're still cheap at that level. So that's not fully reflective of the upside case here. We think that this market's got a long way to go. Let's wait and see when it happens.
Yeah, well, that's a good optimistic point to finish it off. Get ahead of the curve, I guess, when this thing does happen. But before we sort of finish there, Chris, if somebody wants to invest in the Octopus funds or in the smaller, you know, your small cap fund, how best to do that?
We're on all platforms, Paul, as you might expect. We have three funds: the FP Octopus Multicap Income Fund, which is why I was talking about some yields. We got FP Octopus UK Market Cap Growth Fund, which is some of the smaller names we've discussed today, and the FP Octopus UK Future Generations Fund, which is a more thematic fund based around sustainability, environment, people, places, planets, all that sort of good stuff. So we're on all platforms, so please. And if you wanted to speak to me, please just drop me a line, and very happy to have a call.
Yeah, good. Okay, well, I strongly suggest investors to have a look through many of those iconic names in that portfolio, particularly the ones I get wrong. Okay, Guy, well, thanks very much, Chris, and look forward to touching base in 6 months' time.
See you, Paul. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.